Hello and welcome to Oxtalk for Tuesday the 12th of May 2026. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Lisa Bent, Rosemary Shergold and Margaret Simpson. They have been recorded at home by Stephen Harness, Sean Kendall, who we welcome as a new reader for Oxtalk, and Rosemary Shergold. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 5:16 a.m. and sunset is at 8:47 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events, births and deaths from May the 12th in history. In 1215, the Baron's Ultimatum was served on King John by English barons, which eventually led to the creation and signing of the Magna Carta. In 1789, William Wilberforce made his first major speech on abolition in the House of Commons, reasoning the slave trade was morally reprehensible and an issue of natural justice. In 1926, the first flight over the North Pole took place. The airship Norge became the first vessel to fly over the North Pole, led by Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen and piloted by the craft's Italian designer Umberto Nobile. In 1937, the coronation of King George VI took place at Westminster Abbey. Born Albert Frederick Arthur George, he had become king following the abdication of his elder brother, King Edward VIII, who stood down to marry twice divorced American socialite Wallis Simpson. In 2022, the first images were published of the supermassive black hole Sagittarius A star that lies at the centre of the Milky Way galaxy, captured by the Event Horizon Telescope collaboration, a worldwide network of radio observatories. Born on this day in 1812 was Edward Lear, English landscape painter and poet, famous for his Complete Nonsense book. Was born in Holloway, North London. In 1820, Florence Nightingale, British nurse who revolutionised nursing during the Crimean War, was born in Florence in the Grand Duchy of Tuscany. In 1925, Lawrence Peter Yogi Berra, born Lorenzo Pietro Berra, American baseball catcher, coach and manager, was born in St. Louis, Missouri. Berra was known for his impromptu pithy comments, malapropisms and seemingly unintentional witticisms, which became known as yogiisms, including "it's deja vu all over again," "you can observe a lot by watching," "always go to other people's funerals, otherwise they won't go to yours," and "the future ain't what it used to be." In 1980, Rishi Sunak, British politician who was Chancellor from 2020 to 2022, and Prime Minister from 2022 to 2024, was born in Southampton. In the world of entertainment, there were several notable births on this day. In 1903, Wilfred Hyde White, British actor, was born in Boughton-on-the-Water, Gloucestershire. In 1907, Katharine Hepburn, American actress, was born in Hartford, Connecticut. In 1907, Leslie Charteris, Chinese-English-American detective writer who created the character Simon Templar in The Saint, was born in Singapore. In 1924, Tony Hancock, English comedian and actor, was born in Birmingham. In 1928, Burt Bacharach, American Grammy and Academy Award-winning composer of I'll Never Fall in Love Again and Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, was born in Kansas City, Missouri. In 1938, Susan Hampshire, English actress, was born in Kensington, London. In 1942, Ian Dury, English rock musician with the Blockheads, was born in Upminster, Essex. In 1953, Phil Beer, English multi-instrumentalist and composer, best known as the member of the group Show of Hands, was born in Exminster, Devon. And in 1956, Homer Simpson, American fictional patriarchal character and donut aficionado from the long-running animated television show The Simpsons, was born in Springfield. and deaths on this day. In 1860, Charles Barry, British architect, probably best known for the rebuilding of the Palace of Westminster, died following a heart attack aged 64 at his home in Clapham Common, London. In 1969, Martin Lamble, British folk rock drummer with Fairport Convention, was killed in a vehicle crash, aged just 19. In 1994, John Smith, British Labour Party leader from 1992 to 1994 and MP for Monklands East in Scotland, died from a heart attack at St Bartholomew's Hospital, London, aged 55. In 2001, Pierino Perry Como, American singer of Catch a Falling Star and TV personality, died in his sleep at his home in Jupiter Inlet Colony, Florida, aged 88. And now on to the news for this week. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles. Outro, outro, outro. That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, we now have a new landline number for you to call. The number is 01865 377 635. That's 01865 377 635. Please leave a message for Michelle, our listener coordinator. Alternatively, you can call Margaret on 074-96-06-2280. That's 074-96-06-2280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Or you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. The current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspapers skill. Instructions on how to do this are contained in a separate track in this edition. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.
Wildlife lovers are being encouraged to reconnect with the natural world this June. The Berkshire, Buckinghamshire and Oxfordshire Wildlife Trust is inviting people to take part in 30 Wild Days, a UK wild campaign led by the Wildlife Trust to help people experience and enjoy nature every day throughout the month. A regular feature in the summer diaries for over a decade, the challenge has helped people to get outside to enjoy and connect with nature as part of their everyday lives and has attracted more than 3 million participants nationwide. Liz Shearer, Community Engagement Director at BeBout, said, "The 30 Days Wild Challenge is one of the highlights of my year. It gives me an extra incentive to take a few minutes a day to simply notice all the nature around me, whether that's listening to birds singing, looking for flowers blooming, or watching a bumblebee buzzing around. I would encourage everyone to join and discover the joys of making time to get closer to nature this June. Participants are encouraged to use all 5 senses to experience the natural world, whether through sensory walk in their neighborhood or by noticing how wildlife relies on sight, sound, scent, touch, and taste to survive. This year's activities are designed to be flexible with weekly themes and ideas to try rather than the requirement to do something every day. Suggestions include growing wildlife-friendly plants, learning to identify a bird song, or starting a nature journal. Families can enjoy activity packs with new nature-inspired trading cards for collecting and swapping, whilst adults will receive a postcard to send to a loved one, complete with tips on how to do wild things in their garden, local green space, or even from home. Liz Bonin, president of the Wildlife Trust, said, "Every year I look forward to 30 Days Wild to strengthen my connection to nature as well as to wildlife lovers across the British Isles. It makes our lives a little wilder, whether it's through learning something new about an amazing creature or giving back to nature by turning a window box into a pollinator pit stop. You don't have to go far to find something wonderful, especially in June, where nature is on full display. The challenge also encourages people to give back by planting wildlife-friendly flowers, leaving food and water out for wildlife, or getting involved with a local nature group. People are encouraged to share their activities on social media throughout June, or to join others taking part across the UK.
A new group has formed to fight what they describe as parasite landlords as part of a network of campaigns to challenge the prices renters are facing. The Oxford Renters Union launched their first campaign on May the 1st with a march through the city on May morning after forming the not-for-profit cooperative last November. The union's aim is to collectively resist rent increases and stop the soaring rent costs in the city being decided by landlords alone. Strategically launching their campaign on the same day the Renters' Rights Act took effect, the union is asking renting households to pledge to challenge their landlords if they attempt to increase their rent by going to a tribunal. The Act has made the campaign possible by ending no-fault evictions, giving tenants the ability to complain to and challenge their landlords without the threat of losing their home. Maisie W., communications officer for the union, said, "Why should landlords get yet another pay rise by leeching off my hard work? Why am I paying for my parasite landlord's fancy cars and holidays when I can't afford to have either? Housing should be a human right and not a commodity. That's why we're asking you to resist your next rent increase. Resist on principle. Resist for yourself and for the others in your community who can barely afford to live." Average monthly private rent went up across England in the year to March 2026, up by 3.4% to £1,434, according to data from the Office of National Statistics. The data also revealed that Oxford paid the highest average rent of anywhere in the UK outside of London in March at £1,952, up 6.9% on the year before, more than double the average rent increase within that period in the rest of the country. Oxford has also seen high and increasing numbers of people experiencing homelessness, with figures consistently going up over the past 5 years. And charities like Homeless Oxfordshire pointing to the stark rental picture for some tenants. Oxford Renters Union plan is to take private landlords who want to increase rents to tribunal, where they will flood the hearing with pledges to demonstrate that the city's market rate is already too high and is still increasing. The union also argues that overwhelming the tribunal with disputes will prolong the hearing process's time, keeping rents lower for longer. It's part of a coordinated campaign being launched alongside other unions doing the same kind of work, including Resist Rent Rises, a network of unions including London Renters Union and Greater Manchester Tenants Union.
A Lego-themed festival is returning to Oxford, promising creative fun for fans of all ages. The Oxford Brick Festival will take place at the King's Centre in Oxford on the 11th of July. Organisers say that this year's event will offer the most exciting Lego fan event ever created, with something for every type of enthusiast. A spokesman said, "Every Brick Festival event is filled with Lego-themed fun as families, collectors, adult builders and every kind of Lego fan come together for a day of brick-filled bliss. Whether you're a die-hard collector or a casual Lego fan, the Oxford Brick Festival at King's Centre is the place to be." The festival will feature speed building competitions, master builder-led build challenges, scavenger hunts, and a dedicated building area. Visitors can also explore gaming zones and a Lego remote control car zone. The key attraction will be a brand new, unique selection of Lego displays crafted by master Lego builders from across the country. A spokesman said, "Get up close and personal. Chat with those Lego artists about their latest projects, snag some insider tips, and leave brimming with inspiration. Attendees will also be able to browse a wide range of LEGO sets, collectible minifigures, loose bricks, and accessories at trader tables. Early bird tickets start at £8 for adults, £6 for children, and £20 for a family pass. Tickets are available at www.oxfordbrickfestival.com.
Patients are being given more opportunities to take part in health research. Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust has launched a new scheme called Count Me In, designed to inform eligible individuals about research studies with the aim of creating a fairer and more inclusive approach to research participation. Those who opt in may be contacted about relevant studies, but can change their mind at any time without it affecting their care. Professor Andrea Ciprani, Director of the NIHR Clinical Research Facility at Oxford Health and Associate Director of Research and Development at the Trust, said, "Count Me In is about giving people clear, fair opportunities to hear about research whilst ensuring choice and respect remain at the centre of everything we do. Research supported by Count Me In could lead to improvements in mental health and community services by testing new approaches and treatments, enhancing care and helping to identify what works best for patients." The Trust emphasised that participation in research is always voluntary. Count Me In simply makes it easier for people to find out about studies that might interest them, so they can make an informed decision. More information, including frequently asked questions, a short animation, and downloadable resources, can be found on the Count Me In website at www.oxfordhealth.nhs.uk/research/themes/count-me-in/.
Patients, visitors and staff now have easier access to improved hospital transport. A newly enhanced 600 bus route operated by Oxford Bus Company launched on May the 3rd and now serves more stops throughout the Churchill Hospital site, including the main entrance, Sobo House, Ockdem and the East Entrance. Previously, the service only stopped on Roosevelt Drive outside the hospital grounds. Lisa Hofen, Chief Estates and Facilities Officer at Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We welcome the introduction of this enhanced bus service, which will improve connectivity to the Churchill Hospital site. Reliable and accessible public transport is hugely important for our patients, visitors and staff, helping people to get to appointments more easily and supporting our workforce to travel to and from work. Better links to our hospitals are a real positive and will help reduce car journeys while improving the overall experience for those using our services. The updated service aims to reduce car travel and improve convenience for all users. Buses will run every 30 minutes during the day, Monday to Saturday, hourly in the evenings and on Sundays. The 600 route also continues to serve the John Radcliffe Hospital. Further details, including connections to Central Oxford and park and ride locations, can be found on the Oxford Bus Company website."
Millwall head coach Alex Neil has praised Oxford United winger Edumu Umaku, despite the winger asking to leave the club in January. The Lions boss previously said that the club did not initially want to sell Umaku during the winter transfer window, but it was the Irishman's wish to seek more game time elsewhere. Umaku was used mainly as an impact substitute at his former club and struggled to tie down a place in the U's first 11 after his deadline day move. Performances in the final few games of the season led to the 22-year-old starting the final two fixtures of the season. A 4-1 home win over Sheffield Wednesday and a 2-0 defeat at the Den. "It was great to see Edumu," Lions boss Neil said after the final day fixture. "He is a really good lad. Always gave everything when he went on the pitch for us." Umaku got a good reception from the home fans. Told reporters this week he'd be a Millwall fan for life. "Edumu and I had a couple of chats prior to him leaving. He wanted to get game time. He didn't want to leave Millwall. So I'm not saying it as if he wanted to get out the door and we should all hate him. He's a good lad. He wanted to play. He just couldn't get as much game time as he wanted while he was here. And I understand that he wanted to go and get game time, which I've got no problems with. I've had that conversation many a time.
A number of roadworks and regulatory changes are set to take place across Oxfordshire. The latest updates and public notices include temporary road closures, speed limit proposals, parking regulation amendments, and a number of new public rights of way orders, all affecting residents and commuters in the coming weeks and months. In Blackbird Leas, a temporary footpath closure is in effect to facilitate SSE electrical diversion works. The path is to the rear of 25 to 29 Knights Road and is anticipated to be completed by May the 19th. The closure began on May the 4th and is expected to remain in place for 6 months or until works are completed, whichever comes first. In Oxford, Henley Street will be closed to vehicles around the clock for footway and curb works until May 29th, but with signed diversions via Hurst Street, Bullington Road and Iffley Road. Broadmarsh Lane in Freeland is also closed for power works supply on May the 12th. In Lynham and Milton under Wychwood, Briary Road and Lynham Road will be closed from May the 18th to May the 29th for resurfacing. Cox Rise in Swinbrook will be closed between May the 20th and May 31st for similar resurfacing works. Other closures affecting the Charbury area include an unnamed road towards Grammar School Hill and part of Hixit Wood, both closed from May the 7th to May the 12th for fibre cabling work. Public rights of way are also impacted. Bridleway 423-1-20 on Cow Lane, Didcot, is closed for 24 hours a day for road construction, with works anticipated to complete by November 2026 and a signed diversion provided. A footpath in Wantage between Mayfield Avenue and 20 Meadow Close will be closed from May the 25th to June the 12th for essential gas mains replacement. Long-term closures include Church Lane in South Newington, which is closed between Main Road and High Street until May the 15th for electricity cable works. Wycombe Lane in Bodicut is closed from May the 20th to August the 18th for electrical utility works with access retained for cyclists and pedestrians. Ells Lane in Bloxham is closed for May the 18th until June the 28th for electrical power works. Parking regulations are also being updated. Charlwell District Council has amended its off-street parking order to bring Pioneer Square in Bicester under existing parking regulations for Banbury, Bicester and Kidlington. Private cars, motorcycles and certain commercial vehicles up to 2.5 tonnes will be permitted to use the car park, with free parking allowed for loading and unloading. New restrictions include 3-hour limit for disabled badge holders and a 1-hour no-return policy. Hackney and private hire vehicles, as well as commercial vehicles, whilst loading and unloading, may use the car park without charge. Speed limit changes form part of Oxfordshire's wider Vision Zero road safety strategy. Proposals include new 40-mile-per-hour and 50-mile-per-hour limits along sections of the A361 between Williams Cot and Bradwell. Shipland under Wychwood and Williamscott Hill and Bradwell Grove are set to move from higher speed limits to newly proposed 40 mph restrictions. The route from Chipping Norton to Ascot under Wychwood is earmarked for a 50 mph limit, replacing the current national speed limit. In Widford, the council is proposing to reduce the current 30 mph zone to 20 mph in a bid to improve safety for all road users. For more details on current and proposed orders, visit letstalk.oxfordshire.gov.uk. Further information can also be obtained for Oxfordshire County Council's Environment and Place team at County Hall, Oxford, or by calling 0345 310 1111. To keep up to date with the latest public notices, please visit publicnoticeportal.uk.
Fans of the BBC's murder mystery series Ludwig are celebrating as the drama is expected to be returning to TV screens. But some fans of the series set in Cambridge and starring David Mitchell will be disappointed to hear that Geraint Howell is not returning in the role of DC Simon Evans. Series 1 of the detective drama was a huge hit in 2024, becoming the channel's biggest new scripted show since 2022. It attracted more than 9.5 million viewers across 28 days. Now a second series expected to be shown soon. David Mitchell will return as John Ludwig Taylor, while Anna Maxwell Martin will also be back as his sister-in-law, Lucy Betts Taylor. Best known for his role in the comedy Peep Show, David Mitchell was born in Headington and was a pupil at Abingdon School before going to university at Oxford University's New College. Speaking with Radio Times, Geraint Howell, who currently stars as Dr. Dennis Whittaker in The Pit, was asked if he will appear in future episodes of Ludwig. "Unfortunately not, no," he replied. "I hope the door is still open because I really love that show." Master puzzle setter John Ludwig Taylor is now a crime scene consultant working on impossible crimes for the Cambridge Police Authority.
An underground water saving partnership is aiming to tackle unseen leaks. Northeast-based Origin Tech, an AI and satellite technology specialist, has secured a 13-month contract with Thames Water to help detect and reduce water loss across its network. The Origin Orbit system uses satellite imagery and artificial intelligence to pinpoint underground leaks within a 30-meter radius, offering a faster and more accurate alternative to traditional detection methods. Shane Gloucester, head of leakage at Thames Water, said, "A huge proportion of our leaks are never seen by customers, as they are underground and hard to find. To repair these as quickly as we can, it is vital that we use the latest innovative technology available." Partnering with Origin Tech, deploying their satellite data to detect leaks gives us faster and more accurate indication of where the network has issues, enabling us to work more efficiently in our pursuit of bringing down water loss. The partnership, which began in March, builds on a successful 18-week trial period that identified more than 800 leaks, saving an estimated 8.7 million litres of water per day. Thames Water is now the first water company to fully integrate Origin Orbit technology into business-as-usual leakage operations. Founded in 2019, Origin Tech currently works with 12 UK water companies, helping to prevent more than 3 billion litres of water leakage across the country. John Marston, co-founder of Origin Tech, said, "With one-fifth of all water in the UK being lost through leakage every year, the need for innovative solutions is evident."
Oxford has been named the second most culturally rich place to live. The accolade was awarded by global travel site Big 7 Travel in its latest ranking of the 30 most culturally rich places to live in the UK. The study measured factors influencing daily life, such as the number of museums and libraries per capita, the percentage of locals employed in the creative industries, the variety of cuisines and languages spoken, proximity to UNESCO sites, and the strength of the annual festival calendar. Oxford's cultural identity was noted for extending beyond its famous university, with 6.7 libraries per capita, 8.6% of the local workforce in creative industries, and more than 120 languages spoken in the city, is recognised for its blend of intellectual heritage and global influence. Landmarks such as the Sheldonian Theatre, Croatian Theatre Company, and neighbourhoods like Jericho and Cowley Road, each contributing to Oxford's varied cultural life, were highlighted. These areas feature in bi-monthly farmers' markets, Iranian tea houses, Afghan restaurants, and the annual Cowley Road Carnival, further showcasing the city's diverse cultural offerings. Edinburgh topped the list as the most culturally rich place to live in the UK.
Oxford United have confirmed changes to the club's hierarchy as chairman Grant Ferguson steps down. The U's have confirmed changes to its board and chair with the appointment of two directors and a new chairman. Ferguson has stepped down from his role as chairman after 4 years, but will remain on the board of directors. Replacing Ferguson is Dusan Bogdanovic, a figure who has served at board and executive level previously in professional football and who says the club brings extensive experience. Also joining the club is Rudy Laxmana, who, like Ferguson, is a former Inter Milan board member. United says that the two new additions are part of the club's ongoing commitment to driving football performance, improving strategic direction and progression both on and off the pitch. The club also said these appointments reflect Oxford United's continued focus on strengthening its leadership, governance and long-term planning as the club looks ahead positively to the future. The leadership group at the U's now consists of Ferguson, Bogdanovic, Laxmana, Aninja Bakri and Sumrith Tiger Thanakanjana Sanuth. It's understood that the Bogdanovic has been a football agent in Indonesia. He worked for Level Up Asia, of which Yellow's winger Marcelino Ferdinand is signed to. He has been pictured previously in December 2024 with Oxford's owner Eric Thohir and FIFA president Gianni Infantino on the new chairman's Instagram profile. Bogdanovic was CEO at Indonesian club Garudayaksa's Foundation, who have just run promotion from the Championship to the Super League. The new chairman replaces Ferguson, who was appointed in 2022. During that time, Oxford has been promoted to the Championship in the 2023-24 season and were recently relegated back down to League One under head coach Matt Bloomfield. The club have thanked Ferguson for his dedication, leadership and contribution in his time as chair. The U's are owned by Indonesian businessman and politician Thohir, who is also the chairman of the Football Association of Indonesia. Thohir also owns an Indonesian media and entertainment company called Mahaka X. It's understood that New Oxford board member Laxmana is on the board of commissioners at that company. Thohir, who is also former chairman of Inter Milan, took control of the club in 2022 as part of a group which held a 51% stake. The owner increased his share in November 2025. The Yellows have been relegated from the Championship this season after finishing 22nd in the table.
A new chief executive has been announced for Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust. Dr. Michael Holland will become the next chief executive later this year, subject to the completion of pre-employment checks following the retirement of Grant MacDonald. Dr. Holland brings extensive clinical and leadership experience, having started his career at South London and Maudsley NHS Foundation Trust as a consultant psychiatrist before moving into senior positions. Dr. Holland said, "I'm very pleased to have accepted the role of Chief Executive of Oxford Health. The Trust has a strong record of providing compassionate, high-quality care, and I look forward to working with colleagues to continue supporting patients, service users and carers. My focus will be on maintaining safe, inclusive and person-centred services, and on building confidently on the strong foundations already in place." He served as an Executive Medical Director from 2016 to 2022, and later became Chief Executive of the Tavistock and Portman NHS Foundation Trust. In that role, he led the organisation through a merger, improving its governance, performance and quality. Chair of NHS Oxford Health, Andrea Young, said, "The board is confident that Michael has the experience and values needed to lead the Trust into its next chapter, and we very much look forward to welcoming them to the Trust." I would also like to thank Grant MacDonald for his leadership and dedication to Oxford Health. Grant has led the organisation with integrity and compassion, with a clear focus on patient care and staff well-being, and we wish him well in his retirement.
Sir David Attenborough turned 100 on Friday the 8th of May, and the RSPCA is marking the milestone with a call for action. The charity is inviting people across Oxfordshire to honour the broadcaster's birthday by taking part in its Summer of Kindness campaign, which encourages everyone to complete 7 simple acts of kindness for animals, aims to improve animal welfare and help protect wildlife during the summer months. Rebecca Mackin, a wildlife expert at the RSPCA, said, "Sir David Attenborough has inspired generations to fall in love with animals, and he's been a lifelong advocate for wildlife. His passion, care and voice for conservation has encouraged millions of people, including many across the RSPCA, to dedicate their lives to helping animals. As Sir David celebrates this milestone birthday, we are also celebrating his legacy in changing the way the world sees wildlife and the importance of animal welfare. The campaign comes at a critical time for animals. Each summer, the RSPCA records a spike in reports of cruelty towards both pets and wildlife. Last summer, the charity took 34,401 cruelty calls to its emergency line, up by a third from the year before. Despite these challenges, the RSPCA believes there is hope, thanks in part to Sir David's lasting influence on animal welfare and conservation." Dale Grant, an RSPCA inspector, said, "As a 50-year-old man, Sir David's productions back in the early 80s was a spark that initiated a lifetime of love and work within nature. A true hero and inspiration, the RSPCA's Summer of Kindness campaign outlines 7 actions the public can take to support animals and wildlife. These include planting nectar-rich flowers for pollinators, feeding hedgehogs with pet food and fresh water, making homemade pet treats, and building rescue boxes to help injured wildlife. The charity also encourages people to organise litter picks, create bee drinking stations, and ensure pets are kept cool and safe during hot weather." Jason Finch, a learning and development specialist at the RSPCA, said, "From a very early age, my passion for animals developed as a direct result of watching Sir David's documentaries, beginning with Life on Earth in 1979. The charity is reminding the public that even small gestures can make a big difference in creating a kinder world for animals and people alike." Ms. Mackin said, "Positive change often starts with simple everyday actions, from helping keep local communities clear of litter to providing water and safe food for visiting wildlife. We can all get involved in making a big difference for animals."
Witney Town Council is backing the No Mow May campaign once again. The national scheme encourages people to let grass grow throughout May to help pollinators and boost biodiversity. No Mow May supports the growth of native wildflowers, which provide food and habitat for bees and other insects. Witney Town Council said, "With around 97% of the UK's flower-rich meadows lost since the 1970s, even small changes like leaving grass to grow can make a meaningful difference in nectar production. Areas in Witney selected for this year's scheme include parts of Wood Green, Oxlease, Coggeshill Road, Thorny Lees and Burwell Recreation Centre. These sites add to existing flower zones at Windrush Cemetery and the churchyards of Holy Trinity and St Mary's." Witney Town Council said, "The Town Council will continue to ensure the public spaces are well managed, with access and visibility carefully maintained for residents and visitors." The Council reminded residents that some grassed areas in Witney are the responsibility of Oxfordshire County Council and West Oxfordshire District Council. These may include designated road nature verge areas. Residents are encouraged to report concerns to the appropriate authority via Fix My Street or by using the land ownership map on the council's website. The council also encouraged residents to leave part of their garden uncut during May to support wildlife at home.
Cameron Brannigan says he's hurt after Oxford United ended their championship tenure with a frustrating defeat at Millwall. Matt Bloomfield's side lost 2-0 at the Den thanks to a Femi Aziz double. Hughes captain Brannigan beaten by the winger for the opening goal. It was Oxford's final championship fixture before returning to League One, after 2 years in the second tier with relegation confirmed before their win over Sheffield Wednesday last week. Brannigan was named club captain in last September, taking over from the departing Elliot Moore, and was a key member of the League One promotion-winning yellow side of 2023-24. "I thought they were very good," the 29-year-old said regarding opponents Millwall. "Didn't think that we were great. Obviously, they had a lot to do, and it's a tough place to come. I thought they kept the ball very well, and I don't think we laid a glove on them, to be honest. That's the frustrating part. It's all about looking forward to the next season. We want to bounce back. The frustration is massive at this moment in time. It hurts a lot. It has done so since the first day we found out. I think that we have to get ourselves ready this summer because it's going to be a really tough season next season. We want to bounce back and get back in this league. Oxford have a big squad to deal with in the summer, with players coming and going after loan moves, some out of contract and others whom the club will surely be receiving offers for. The Ewes will return to the third tier of English football for the 2026-27 season, where they spent 8 years competing before winning promotion 2 years ago. We're going to need big characters all season. We've played in League One for a long time, and it's not an easy league. It's something that we've got to be prepared for come pre-season. From day one, we have to have that aim and try to get back to where we want to be, and that's here. A standout player and leader for the majority of its 8 years at the club, Brannigan could be one who garners interest from elsewhere this summer. I'm under contract, so this will be full focus in pre-season. We want to improve. We want to do better."
A hearing dog charity is urging Oxfordshire residents to break down communication barriers for deaf people. Hearing Dogs for Deaf People, which has a puppy training hub in South Oxfordshire, shared the call during the current Deaf Awareness Week. The charity highlighted ongoing challenges faced by deaf individuals despite increasing awareness of hearing loss. David Robson, a spokesperson for Hearing Dogs for Deaf People, said Hearing Dogs provide life-changing support for deaf people, alerting them to important and often life-saving sounds, as well as helping them feel more independent and more connected. "But inclusion goes beyond the work of our dogs. It's about how we all communicate and interact every day. Small changes in behaviour can make a huge difference. To mark Deaf Awareness Week, the charity has published 10 practical tips for communicating with deaf people. The advice includes making sure you have someone's attention before speaking, facing them so they can lip read, and avoiding covering your mouth or speaking while eating. Other suggestions include speaking clearly without exaggerating, using written communication if needed, and learning basic British Sign Language, BSL. Maxine Clare, who was partnered with her hearing dog, Walter, in 2016, described the isolation that can come with hearing loss. Ms. Clare said, "When my own hearing loss deteriorated, I discovered just how isolating deafness can be. It wasn't just about missing sounds, it was missing the connection with people. If I didn't respond, people assumed I was ignoring them. I've been pushed, dragged, screamed at, and sworn at just because I didn't hear people asking me to move. These moments are what makes me so passionate about deaf awareness. Walter wears a burgundy jacket that signals he's a hearing dog. That jacket does more than grant access. It sparks conversations and breaks down barriers. If I could leave you with one thought, it would be that next time, if someone doesn't respond when you are talking to them, instead of feeling affronted, embarrassed or frustrated, maybe your first thought should be, perhaps they're deaf. Hearing Dogs for Deaf People trains dogs to alert deaf people to vital sounds such as smoke alarms, doorbells and even baby monitors. The charity has developed a practical guide called It Matters, which offers simple advice to help people communicate more effectively and confidently with deaf people."
The risk of a new virus from a Dutch cruise ship is essentially zero, a leading Oxford University expert has said. A British crew member diagnosed with the Hunter virus is being prepared for medical evacuation from the Dutch flag cruise ship MV Hondius. Meanwhile, a British passenger was medically evacuated from the ship on April 27th and remains in isolation in hospital in Johannesburg, South Africa. A total of 7 suspected cases have been identified, with 3 deaths so far on the ship anchored off Cape Verde. Sir Andrew, director of the Oxford Vaccines Group, said, The Andes virus, which has been identified as the variant behind the outbreak, is known very rarely to spread between people with close contact. It means it's very easy to isolate people who are unwell and to follow quarantine and so on to avoid spread to other people. Professor Sir Andrew Pollard, director of the Oxford Vaccine Group at the University of Oxford, told BBC Radio 4's Today programme, the Andes strain of this virus is common among rodents in countries like Argentina in South America. With this particular hantavirus, the Andes virus, is known very rarely to spread between people with close contact, usually symptomatic individuals who are in close contact with each other. And that's important because it means it's very easy to isolate people who are unwell and to follow quarantine and so on to avoid spread to other people. It's not like the situation we had with COVID-19 in the pandemic, when people could spread even without symptoms, and therefore it was able to spread very easily in the population. The ship, which was sailing from Argentina to Cape Verde, has already had 3 deaths linked to hantavirus, with 2 Dutch passengers and 1 German passenger suspected to have died from the disease. Once a crew member, the Dutch colleague and another passenger had been evacuated, the ship will start the 3-day journey to the Canary Islands, docking in either Gran Canaria or Tenerife. Dr. Jacqueline Weyer, Acting Deputy Executive for National Institute for Communicable Diseases in South Africa, said, "The Andes virus is a slow burner, moves really slowly, which allows a window of opportunity to contain the outbreak." Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer has said plans are being made for the safe onward travel of Britons on the ship. Hantavirus infections, which are usually spread by infected rodents, urine or faeces, can lead to severe respiratory illness and can sometimes be fatal. While it is rare, hantavirus infections can spread between people, according to the World Health Organization.
Notice to listeners of Oxhawk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
HIV treatment has not only transformed lives, but also paused the process of human evolution. New research led by the University of Oxford and published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Science reveals that antiretroviral therapy, known as ART, may have halted HIV-driven natural selection in humans by suppressing the virus and improving survival rates. The study suggests that before ART became widely available, the unchecked spread of HIV could have led to rapid evolutionary changes in human immune genes, specifically those in HLA-B family. This process would have favoured generic variants that offered protection against the virus, similar to what is believed to have occurred in chimpanzees millions of years ago. Philip Goulder, Professor of Paediatrics at the University of Oxford and senior author of the study, said, This study provides rare evidence of the scale of population genetic change that an infectious disease can drive over a relatively short timescale. What is remarkable is that modern medicine, through the rollout of antiretroviral therapy, has effectively interrupted this process of natural selection. The research team examined long-term health data from antenatal cohorts in the KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, comparing outcomes in the pre-ART era, 1998 to 2005, to those in the modern treatment era of 2015-2025. Their analysis found that in the absence of ART, genetic variants linked to the poor HIV control increased the risk of rapid disease progression and mother-to-child transmission. Protective variants are associated with slower progression and lower rates of transmission. Modelling suggested that without ART, the frequency of protective HLA-B variants in the population would have doubled between 1990 and 2035, while disease-susceptible variants would have fallen by around 38%. However, the widespread of ART has nearly eliminated these selective pressures, improving survival regardless of genetic makeup and breaking the link between maternal genes and the risk of passing HIV to children in treated individuals. Professor Gulda said, "By suppressing HIV and preventing transmission, ART removes the differential survival and reproductive effects that would otherwise favour certain genetic variants. In doing so, it not only saves lives, but also alters the evolutionary trajectory of the human population." The study also speaks to a long-standing theory in evolutionary biology that infectious diseases help maintain diversity in immune system genes. Dr. Bridget Penman, co-senior author from the Department of Biology at University of Oxford, said, "Estimating the size and speed of HIV-driven population genetic change that has been averted by ART demonstrates profound public health success of ART, and at the same time gives us insight into a fundamental evolutionary process underpinning human immunogenetics." The researchers noted that incomplete access to treatment or poor adherence could still allow some level of genetic selection to persist.
Cogges Manor Farm celebrated its 1,000 years of history with a range of activities for families to enjoy over the bank holiday weekend. Visitors flocked to Witney over the weekend for the farm's Spring Back in Time History Day. It was a day packed with immersive and hands-on fun, which celebrated the 1,000 years of history at Cogges. Families enjoyed the mighty 18th century steam engine and dancing from the 17th century dance and music group Vale Islanders. Family-based group Huith Miriam brought to life the medieval period on the dairy lawn, while there was ancient candle-making and demos of 17th and 18th century sail-making. Over in the manor house, visitors were grinding grain and making bread, taking part in Victorian wash day and seeing how butter was made hundreds of years ago. Guests also learnt to lay a table for dinner in Victorian times, took part in tours and learnt about the Bayeux tapestry and its connection to Cogges.
A new Lego shop opens on May the 7th at the Oxford Westgate Shopping Centre. Joining the ranks of Primark, TK Maxx, John Lewis and more, the toy shop is the latest addition to the city centre retail spot. The hoardings outside featured the brand's logo, as well as iconic Oxford sites, including Rowers and Oxford University's Radcliffe Camera, all made from Lego bricks. It is Oxfordshire's first Lego store, despite selling products inside shops such as Toys R Us and supermarkets. Shweta Munshi, Vice President of Marketing at the Lego Group, said earlier, "We found the perfect site at Westgate, Oxford. The new store will allow builders of all ages to be inspired by the endless play opportunities Lego building has to offer. The store will be a top destination for product launches and events, while acting as a hub for our Lego community and new builders alike. The Westgate unit was formerly a temporary Christmas decorations and gift shop in the past."
The devastating impact of a major fire in Oxford has cost a local store more than £1,300 in damages. Smoke could be seen rising from the ground in Cowley Road, outside Sunday's Gelato, opposite the O2 Academy recently. Thames Valley police cars and the Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service fire engines arrived at the scene shortly after, and a cordon was put in place with tape. Members of the public were warned to move away from the site, with flames soon erupting from the smoke, according to onlookers. Officers warned nearby householders to close their windows as a large plume of black smoke rose and spread around the surrounding streets. The road is now reopened. An employee at Sunday's Gelato spoke about the impact of the fire. "It was quite frightening and uncomfortable experience to witness," the worker said. "I was the first person to notice the fire and immediately acted to get all the customers safely out of the shop. As a result of the fire, we suffered a significant loss to the business as we had customers inside and we were open at the time of the incident. We had to close the shop as the electricity cut off our ice cream display and freezer room. Because of this, all products were melted and had to be thrown away. The cleaning cost is more than £1,300.
Firefighters have issued an urgent safety check warning to UK residents about 85,000 faulty tumble dryers. Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service issued a warning about higher manufactured tumble dryers yesterday. The statement said urgent safety checks for 85,000 tumble dryers. Households with specific tumble dryers manufactured by Haier, that's H-A-I-E-R, must check their machine needs and an urgent safety repair. This follows a similar notice last December as Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service issued a warning to residents about tumble dryers. UK residents were warned by the Office of Product Safety and Standards about the tumble dryer fault. According to the government department that is responsible for the safety of consumer products, a total of 85,000 integrated heat pump tumble dryers made by Haier are affected by the problem. It can cause the machine to catch fire, and owners have been told to stop using them immediately.
A surge in costs has put pressure on profits on one of the UK's biggest pub chains, which has watering holes across Oxfordshire. Pub giant JD Weatherspoon said this could therefore result in profits slightly below market expectations following a period of slower sales growth and higher expenses. Chairman and founder Tim Martin said the company has faced substantial increases in costs, including higher national insurance contributions and wages, which are expected to add around £60 million to annual expenses. Weatherspoon is also facing an additional £1.6 million tax bill this year under the Extended Producer Responsibility Packaging Levy. Mr. Martin said, "The company has a strong pipeline of new pubs and planned openings, including Manchester Airport, Heathrow Airport, Paddington Station, Charing Cross Station and Shaftesbury Avenue in central London." Weatherspoon opened 8 new pubs during the quarter, but also closed 8, keeping its total estate unchanged. Robin Hood UK lead analyst Dan Lane said, "Weatherspoon's value proposition continued to draw customers despite broader economic pressures."
Many Oxford personalities have had roads and streets named after them, and as the years pass, memories of them inevitably fade. Now, in one part of the city, efforts are being made to remind everyone of their contributions to city life. City Councillor Ed Turner, who represents Rose Hill and Iffley, has arranged for plaques to be added to 6 street signs in his ward. They have been installed in Williamson Way, Constant Norman Way, John Parker Close, Norman Brown Close, Harold's Way and Krebs Gardens. Family members and residents turned out to join the 6 unveiling ceremonies with warm tributes to those being remembered. Canon Tony Williamson was one of the Britain's leading worker priests, combining his work as a forklift driver at the Cowley Car Body Plant with his role as an Anglican priest. He was a union leader, chairing the largest branch of the Transport and General Workers Union for 16 years. As a city councillor, he chaired the housing committee and became council leader. He was also joint leader of Oxfordshire County Council. As Lord Mayor in 1982 to 1983, he mixed civic duties with clocking in at 7:15 daily at the Press Steel Factory. Connie Norman was head teacher at Rose Hill Primary School for more than 25 years and served as Oxfordshire President for the National Union of Teachers. In 1974, she was presented with the Citizen of the Year Award by the Lord Mayor, Barbara Gatehouse, for her service to the community. Another community champion was City Councillor John, or Jack, Parker, who worked at Morris Motors, was Lord Mayor in 1986 to 1987, played in the brass band and was involved in youth football. Norman Brown founded the Rose Hill Roundabout Community Newspaper and chaired the Community Association. Carroll's Way is named after Carol Roberts, who was Lord Mayor in 1998 to 1999. She also chaired the City Housing Committee and was the first manager of the Rose Hill and Donington Advice Centre. Sir Hans Krebs was Whitley Professor of Biochemistry in Oxford, won the Nobel Prize for his work in 1953. He lived in Adderbury Road, Iffley. Councillor Turner said, "It was very nice for people to get together and learn about those remembered. There is much appetite for more."
Oxford United winger Adomo Ekamu has received his first senior call-up for the Republic of Ireland. Ekamu's national team announced their squad for a May friendly against Grenada, which included 7 new faces. One of those is the U's 22-year-old forward, who receives his first call-up to his country's senior side. Ekamu has appeared previously for the Republic of Ireland's under-21s and under-19s team. For the under-21s, he has played 12 times, scoring 4 goals and assisting twice. The boys in green missed out on qualification last month for the summer's FIFA World Cup in the United States, Canada and Mexico, losing out on penalties to Chechnya in the qualifying playoff semi-finals. Former Millwall man Ekamu joined the Yellows in the January transfer window on deadline day in search of a more game time and being utilised as an impact substitute for the majority of his time at the Den. The Irishman struggled to find the form in his first couple of months in yellow, whilst Oxford found rhythm in their performances. Ekamu's eventually found his way into the starting 11 after a couple of promising substitute appearances in the late season, starting the final 2 championship games against Sheffield Wednesday and Millwall. Unfortunately, Oxford were relegated prior to kick-off against Wednesday, sentencing Ekamu and co. to League One football for the 2026-2027 season.
Global problems could justify the use of contingency funds for an Oxfordshire road project, which could see delivery costs running to over £400 million. County Council Place and Environment boss, Councillor Judy Roberts, confirmed the local authority will apply to Homes England's £79.6 million discretionary fund for the Didcot to Cullum River crossing, which has already secured £332.5 million. The new dual carriageway bridge will connect the A4130 at Didcot with the A415 at Cullum and includes a bridge over the Thames over a rail siding and connections with Appleford and Sutton Courtenay villages via B4106 with segregated walking and cycling facilities. This is one of three major infrastructure projects in the Didcot Garden Town Housing Infrastructure Fund programme. It aims to relieve congestion and support the delivery of more than 12,655 new homes and significant employment across the Science Vale. Mrs. Roberts explained they will give us this money, but we would have to apply for it to justify it. I think, given the global problems at the moment, that's quite a good justification. We have had informal words that they are probably happy to do that. She also approved the awarding of a construction contract for the building of the crossing Central Span, with an estimated cost of around £151 million. The final decision on the contract lies with the Council's Director of Environment and Highways. The meeting heard concerns from Appleford-on-Thames Parish Councillor Greg O'Brien, who last August predicted costs could rise above £400 million. The Parish Council has called for greater transparency on cost, a rethink on an unacceptable 8-month road closure, and for traffic light infrastructure to combat danger at a junction of the B4016 with the crossing to help protect village children. He said the council must reduce the closure period. Council officers agreed to share more details on estimated costs. Mrs. Roberts agreed to look into potential traffic lights in the scheme's design and said she believes the crossing will provide traffic relief for villages and ancient bridges. She also hopes the project will run under budget.
Oxford Health's clinical research facility is hosting an open afternoon. The public, students and staff are invited to celebrate International Clinical Trials Day. Running from 1 till 3:30 p.m. on Wednesday the 20th of May, the event features tea, cake and the tour of the facility. It offers a chance to meet the local research community and learn more about the student placements, careers in research and research opportunities for healthcare professionals. The facility, established in 2011, focuses on improving mental and cognitive health treatments through clinical research. Angela Conlon, Public and Patient Involvement, Engagement and Participation Lead, said the event aims to make the research more visible and approachable. Professor Andrea Cipriani, Oxford Health Clinical Research Facility Director, said events such as these are a great way to show the behind-the-scenes work that our Oxford Health Clinical Research Facility staff carry out.
Oxford City's youngsters were beaten 2-0 by Kidlington in the Oxfordshire Senior Cup final. Held at Tame United's ASM Stadium, the match saw Kidlington secure their first ever win in the competition. The first half was uneventful, with neither team managing a shot on target. However, the second half was a different story, with Kidlington quickly establishing dominance. Ole Nadin opened the scoring with a free kick that curved around the wall into the bottom right-hand corner after 51 minutes. Joey Aust, a former City player, doubled the lead 10 minutes later with a close-range header. The match was interrupted, leading to a lengthy delay when a fan encroached onto the pitch to confront City's goalkeeper, Max Tremid. After the interruption, Killington continued to apply pressure with Otis Castle and Adam Smith, each adding a goal in the 12 minutes of added time. Despite the loss, Oxford City's team, with an average age of 18, have had a commendable season. They have enjoyed success in the FA Cup and reached the final of the County Cup, gaining valuable experience along the way. Defeat does not overshadow their promising future.
Catherine House Hospice is hosting its popular Open Garden Scheme for 2026. The scheme invites supporters to open their gardens to the public to raise vital funds for the hospice. This year's scheme features 11 garden events in areas including Adderbury, Coolworth, Middleton Cheney, Tissot and more. Sir Peter Job and Christine Job, owners of the Old Vicarage in Adderbury, said, "We have been building our garden and arboretum over nearly 30 years to our great pleasure, which we are happy to share with others. especially under the banner of an important cause such as the Catherine House Hospice. Opening the garden across the seasons allows visitors to explore its changing palette, different flowers, evolving colours, trees that transform month by month, ensuring that every visit feels unique. In the 2025-26 season, the scheme raised over £6,100 for Catherine House. Roseanne Thompson, Community Engagement Manager, said, "We are so grateful to our supporters who are generously opening their gardens to the public to raise money for Catherine House. We rely heavily on donations from our community to keep our hospice running, so this support is vital. Garden visitors can enjoy floral borders, water features, orchards, and family-friendly scavenger hunts. Many gardens also offer tea and cake. More information is available at khh.org/gardens.
There is heartbreak as a popular playground in South Oxford is facing the axe after 50 years with the risk of closure. The much-loved adventure playground in Grand Pont, Oxford, is at risk after being hit with a large and unexpected repair bill for an access ramp and a drop in donations. The charity that operates South Oxford Adventure Playground, SOAP, located off White House Road, has warned it can no longer afford to open for after-school sessions due to its funding challenges. For more than five decades, the green space has provided a free, exciting and supervised space to play for children and young people across the city and beyond. However, a recent inspection revealed the wooden ramp providing essential access to the site's hut and toilets is rotten and requires urgent, costly replacement. Without these repairs, the charity cannot safely host many community groups or school visits. Naomi Waite, chair of SOAP committee, said, "Our adventure playground is the beating heart of the community. Children love coming here after school and during the holidays. It's a safe place where they can have fun, make friends, and stay off screens. We work tirelessly to secure grants, but it's getting harder year by year. When we are hit with large, unexpected repair bills, we are forced to cut back on our opening times. It's a heartbreaking decision that nobody wants to make. The charity, which is run by volunteers, has already been forced to reduce its school holiday hours. To prevent further closures, SOAP is issuing an urgent appeal for both donations and new committee members. They are seeking locals who can assist with anything from fundraising and grant applications to site maintenance and administration." Ms. Waite added, "We desperately need people who can spare even a little time, whether it's managing our team of young play workers or helping with odd jobs around the site. Every bit of help ensures that we can keep our gates open for the next generation. Children of all ages, backgrounds and abilities are welcome at SOAP. The playground is open on some days during the school holidays between Easter and October half term. Members of the public can support Save SOAP campaign on its local giving page."
Money struggles are forcing people to choose between heating and eating, Age UK Oxfordshire has warned. The independent charity says rising living costs are hitting older people especially hard, with some in the county limiting heating, water usage and even meals just to cover household bills. Others are cutting back on social activities, increasing the risk of loneliness and isolation. Paul Ringer, Chief Executive of Age UK Oxfordshire, said, "For many older people in Oxfordshire, money worries are hidden but deeply felt. They affect how warm people can keep their homes, how well they eat, and how connected they feel to the world around them. Over time, this can undermine health, confidence, and a sense of dignity." The charity estimates that around 1 in 10 people of pension age in Oxfordshire have a low income, with 2,500 living in neighbourhoods that fall within the 20% most deprived nationally. Age UK Oxfordshire is urging older residents, as well as families and professionals, to check eligibility for pension credit and seek support early if financial worries begin to affect daily life. For more information and confidential support, contact Age UK Oxfordshire on 0345 450 1276.
Two major UK restaurant chains, which have several branches in Oxfordshire, are set to close, with 3,800 jobs lost. Premier Inn owner Whitbread is to cut about 3,800 jobs in the UK and Ireland and to shut its remaining Beefeater and Brewer's Fair restaurants as it resets its five-year business strategy amid tax rises. In recent years, Whitbread has invested heavily in the new Premier Inn hotels across Oxfordshire, while some Premier Inn hotels in the county now have restaurants converted to the chain's in-house Timer brand. A few old-fashioned Beefeater and Brewer's Fair restaurants remain. They include the Longwall Beefeater in Cowley, Bicester Premier Inn Brewer's Fair, the Beefeater restaurant at Oxford Kidlington Airport Hotel, and the Apple Cart Beefeater at the Premier Inn for Didcot. With the cuts set to affect about 12% of Whitbread's 30,000-strong workforce in the UK and Ireland, working in its Beefeater and Brewer's Fair restaurants, this newspaper approached Whitbread to see if the Oxfordshire sites would be affected. Because the proposal is still under consultation, there was no further local information available specific to the county, revealed the spokesperson. The spokesperson added, "We appreciate it must be unsettling for those who may be impacted." A statement last week said, "Whitbread has announced today, April the 30th, that as part of its new five-year plan, it intends to become a pure-play hotel business focused on Premier Inn, the UK's number one hotel brand, which is synonymous with quality and value. This change will involve exiting all of our remaining branded restaurants, which will trade under brands including Beefeater, Brewer's Fair, and a number of which will be converted into approximately 600 additional Premier Inn rooms, with the remaining expected to be sold as ongoing concerns. The proposed changes announced today build on the success of our accelerating growth plan announced in 2024, which involved the conversion of over 200 branded restaurants and to additional rooms and the creation of an integrated restaurant in each hotel. This format has proved highly popular with guests. Under the proposal, it would be rolled out to all hotels where there is currently a branded restaurant. We recognise the impact of this proposal on colleagues who work at the affected sites. As a business which recruits around 15,000 people every year, we expect to be able to retain a significant proportion of those affected and be looking to redeploy as many of our impacted colleagues as possible. We will do all we can to support those colleagues affected."
The RSPCA has welcomed a change in rental law as an historic day for pet ownership. The change, which came into effect on May the 1st, gives tenants in the private rented sector in England the legal right to request permission to keep pets in their rented homes. Under the Renters' Rights Act, landlords cannot reasonably refuse pet requests, marking a significant shift for Oxfordshire renters who have long faced blanket pet bans. David Bowles, head of public affairs at the RSPCA, said, "This is an historic day for pet ownership. For too long, renters in England have been unfairly denied the potential joy of pet ownership." That ends thanks to this new law. This change is a lifeline, not just for families wanting to add a loving pet to the household, but to the many thousands of animals currently stuck in many full-to-bursting centres, who will now have many new opportunities to find loving adopters. Pet ownership is such a big commitment, but can be so rewarding. At the RSPCA, we are celebrating that the Renters' Rights Act will facilitate happier, healthier tenants right across the country and help us tackle a pet rehoming crisis. The charity has described the new law as an opportunity to revolutionise pet ownership and believes it will give more animals the chance of finding a home, especially as many of its centres are currently at full capacity. In recent weeks, the RSPCA has worked with the UK government to highlight the impact that change could have for prospective pet owners. The legislation also promises relief for current pet owners, who often face the tough decision of giving up their animals to secure housing. Mr. Bowles said this scenario has been all too common. He said there are gut-wrenching examples of people having to surrender their pets to access somewhere to live, because their tenancy agreement will not allow pets. Thankfully, those situations too will soon be a thing of the past. Among the animals who may benefit from the new law is Sweeney, a mastiff who spent nearly a year at the RSPCA's Newbrook Farm Animal Centre in Birmingham. Brittany Baker, animal care assistant, said, "He's been with us for over 11 months now, but he's constantly overlooked by potential adopters, which breaks my heart. Sweeney may be a big boy, but he's certainly got a big heart. He's goofy, playful and lovable. He learns fast and enjoys training, as well as quiet walks out and playing in the off-lead paddock." More information about the RSPCA's work and its good practice guide for the housing sector can be found on the charity's website.
An 11-year-old has become the 8 millionth child to take part in a national cricket programme. Ava Montaza Mahdi reached the milestone through the children's charity Chance to Shine and was celebrated at a special event at John Henry Newman Academy in Oxford. More than 200 pupils took part in a cricket-themed assembly and coaching sessions, joined by England fast bowler Sonny Baker. He presented Ava with a signed England shirt and said, "Every player starts somewhere, and for a lot of young people, that first chance to pick up a bat and ball can be the moment the game clicks for them. Chance to Shine plays a massive role in that. They're absolutely key to the grassroots game. I absolutely loved it today. This is what it's all about. This is why we play cricket. It's about the fun and enjoyment." Ava said, "Becoming the 8th millionth child was very cool. I can't explain how fun it was." Annalise Dodds, MP, also attended the event, alongside representative from Oxfordshire Cricket and the England and Wales Cricket Board, ECB. Kate Stevens, chief executive of Chance to Shine, said, "When Chance to Shine was founded in 2005, nobody could have imagined that we would one day reach 8 million children across the UK. Numbers like this are important, but what really matters is the opportunities our brilliant coaches are creating for children in schools and communities every single day."
Over 10 million adults, young people and children in the UK live with arthritis. But the NHS has shown a failure to meet clinical guidelines for treating people with osteoarthritis, resulting in thousands experiencing pain, losing work and income, as well as people's careers and finances. Darren Appleby of Bicester, who has been suffering with the condition for 10 years, said, "I would say the treatment given to people with arthritis is not fit for purpose. You wait months for an appointment via a phone call, to be given some exercises via email. The GP secretary could have done that. They clearly don't understand how debilitating the pain can be. I think going private would be better, as the NHS just isn't up to scratch." Not Just a Touch of Arthritis report was published in February 2022 by Arthritis UK, formerly known as Versus Arthritis. The findings showed thousands with osteoarthritis were frequently left in severe pain and struggled to remain in work due to failures in treatment. Through research carried out during the pandemic, commissioned and funded by Pfizer UK in 2020, the report revealed a large disparity in how many people are being recommended or prescribed non-drug treatments as opposed to medication. Darren, a driving instructor from Bicester, said, "I've always done sports, so as a young person, lots of heavyweight lifting, football, martial arts, and that's all stopping. I now go for walks and play walking football. It's a dull ache 24/7 with stronger pain added in. My hip and lower back pain means sleepless nights, difficulty in putting on my boxers and socks, generally painful when moving. If I stand still for 10 minutes, I seize and can barely walk. It's depressing knowing there's absolutely no help." The 54-year-old was given codeine by the NHS but says that's not enough. Most types of arthritis are long-term conditions. The most common type is osteoarthritis, where the body is unable to maintain and repair the joints, leading to thin and damaged cartilage due to rising age or injury to a joint. Less common types of arthritis are autoimmune conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, and axial spondyloarthritis. People can also experience arthritis if they have cervical spondylosis, fibromyalgia, lupus, or polymyalgia rheumatica. On the NHS Inform website, some common treatments of arthritis include regular exercise, painkillers, physiotherapy, anti-inflammatory drugs, and anti-rheumatic drugs. In severe cases, the NHS recommends surgery. This can include joint replacement, joint fusion, or osteotomy, where a bone is cut and realigned. The website also recommends those living with arthritis to use larger joints as levels, spread the weight of an object, avoid gripping too tightly, and avoid sitting in the same position for long periods of time.
Cycling campaigners have spoken out as data reveals almost 90% of bike thefts in Oxford conclude with no suspect being identified. Robin Tucker, the co-chair of the Coalition of Healthy Streets and Active Travel, said the group is disappointed by the poor results and says more needs to be done to prevent, support and target bike thieves. The coalition includes Oxfordshire Cycling Network, which is the campaigning part for Cycling UK Oxfordshire, and Cyclox, the main cycling group in Oxford. Data from Thames Valley Police shows that there were 2,173 bike thefts from January 2024 to December 2025, an average of 90 per month. Of those cases, an average of 88% of thefts went unsolved with no suspect identified. The results are highly seasonal, with clear peaks in spring, summer, and early autumn, and troughs in winter. While the number of thefts did decrease by 26% in 2025, the number of solved cases increased only marginally by 2%. Mr. Tucker said cycle theft has a high impact in Oxford, with around 55,000 people cycling at least twice a month, meaning theft can impact transport to and from work, school, or to go shopping. He understands the impact of losing a bike after he had a bike stolen, causing hundreds of pounds and hours of disruption. He said, "We are disappointed by the poor results in solving and prosecuting bike theft. We'd like to see more prevention measures, more support from the police, and some proactive operations to catch the serial thieves." For the council, more secure cycle parking with better surveillance would be valuable. In all of Oxford, there are only 3 bike hangars, where some London boroughs have hundreds. The police said identifying suspects can be challenging for several reasons. It says not all bicycle racks or locations are covered by CCTV, and where coverage does exist, footage may not always capture the offence clearly. Almost 2,000 bike thefts in Oxford unsolved by Thames Valley Police over the last 2 years. It says, while overall bicycle theft has reduced, many incidents are opportunistic and take place quickly, frequently, and without witnesses or clear forensic opportunities. Where CCTV is available, it is not always proportionate or practical to review, and fixed camera positions often result in images captured from a distance, or the quality is insufficient to identify an individual. Where CCTV or other evidence is limited or unavailable, it can be difficult to identify suspects. It says it is working closely with local councils, businesses, and other partners through regular meetings and joint problem-solving activity. This includes supporting community safety events, sharing crime prevention advice, discussing environmental improvements, and identifying neighbourhood priorities. Thames Valley Police suggest securing your bicycle using a strong, quality lock at the frame and wheels, at least one of which should be a D-lock. It also suggests choosing well-lit locations covered by CCTV, registering your frame number on a national database approved by Secure by Design, and with security marking it.
The police have renewed an appeal for information after a 5G phone mast was set on fire in Oxford. Thames Valley Police said officers were still appealing for help from the public following the arson attack. The blaze damaged a 5G mast close to the dual carriageway off the Eastern Bypass between 11:10 p.m. and 11:35 p.m. on the 29th of April. No one was injured at the incident close to the Rose Hill and Littlemore roundabout near Sandy Lane West. Officers are keen to hear from motorists who were in the area at the time and may have captured crucial evidence. A spokesperson said, "We are still appealing for help from the public following this arson. We are keen for any drivers with dash cams in the area to check their footage in case they captured anything that could help us. People can contact Thames Valley Police by calling 101 or making a report online, quoting the reference number 432602171. This is the second time in less than 2 months that a 5G mast had been set on fire in Oxford, after a previous incident brought major disruption on the A40. The first incident happened when one or more people broke into a compartment of a mast near Cutslow roundabout last month. They then used an unidentified liquid to start a fire, and again, no one was injured during the incident.
A rescue charity is celebrating a year of supporting cats in need. Nine Lives Cat Rescue, based in Oxfordshire, has spent the past 12 months rehabilitating and rehoming felines. Run entirely by volunteers, the charity focuses on giving each cat the best chance at a new life, with a personal approach to every adoption. Karen, one of the three founders, said, "We like to describe ourselves as small but mighty. We don't have a big facility or a corporate budget, but we do have relentless dedication. Watching a frightened stray grow into a confident, beloved family pet, that's what fuels us." The team, made up of founders Karen, Bex and Heidi, has supported cats across West Oxfordshire and surrounding villages. Nine Lives also has achieved registered charity status in its first year, marking a major step in its mission to help more animals. Bex said, "Do more, we need more hands on deck. We're dreaming up new projects from community education to expanding our foster network, but we can't do it alone." The group is now appealing for additional volunteers to help with everything from fostering and fundraising to administration and social media. Heidi said, "We need help with fostering, fundraising, events, admin, social media, transport, you name it, we need it." Whether someone can spare 2 hours a week or 10, every bit of support helps save lives. As the charity marks its first milestone, the team hopes to continue growing its impact and helping more cats in need.
The Bannister Miles held a record number of runners this year, with Laura Muir taking the win in the Millicent Fawcett Mile. Held in Oxford on May the 4th, the third annual celebration saw more than 1,300 runners follow a one-mile route. The course began at Christchurch Meadow and finished at the iconic Iffley Road Athletic Track. Thomas Renshaw, event organiser from the Oxford University Cross Country Club, said, "Year on year, this event continues to grow. For me, what makes this event so special is the joy you see on a kid's face when you give them their bib number." The mile is such an accessible distance for this age group, and we can only hope that their excitement and joy of running in this event inspires them to continue running for the rest of their lives. Who knows? Some of them may return to Iffley Road in years to come and compete in the elite track races. Pembroke College sponsored this year's event, contributing nearly 50 runners. The community mile is quickly becoming a family favourite, with the family wave expanded to two waves to accommodate more than 400 competitors under 15. The youngest participant was just 2 years old. David Pixley, now 93, attended his third Bannister Mile and was present at Iffley Road in 1954 when Sir Roger Bannister broke the four-minute mile. Gordon Sangera, whose Sangera Foundation sponsored places for schoolchildren, and Thurston Bannister, Sir Roger Bannister's son, both started waves of the community mile. Laura Muir took first place in the women's elite Millicent Fawcett Mile, finishing in 4 minutes 34 seconds. She was followed by Kira Brady-Jones and Oxford athlete Charlotte Buckley, who became the first Oxford student to reach the podium at the Millicent Fawcett Mile. 17-year-old Freddie Rowe from Havering AC won the men's elite race in 4 minutes and 88 seconds. Other strong finishers include Ethan Newell and Jack Kavanagh. Dean Richardson of City of Stoke AC set a new V50 British record with a time of 4 minutes 26 seconds. The men's mile steeplechase saw Will Battershill pull ahead in the final 200 metres to win with a track record of 4 minutes 20 seconds. Mr Renshaw said, "We are proud to be putting on an event that brings in elite level athletes from across the country, with junior athletes right through to senior Olympic medalists. We hope that this, combined with the community mile, is a fulfilling celebration of Sir Roger Bannister's life. A man who was an academic and elite athlete who recognised the benefit that sport could bring to communities across the country."
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, we now have a new landline number for you to call. The number is 01865 377 635. That's 01865 377 635. Please leave a message for Michelle, our listener coordinator. Alternatively, you can call Margaret on 074 96 06 2280. That's 074 96 06 2280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message, or you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from the previous 4 weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. The current edition is also available on Alexa using the Talking Newspapers skill. Instructions on how to do this are contained in a separate track in this edition. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more news. So until then, we hope you have a good week.